We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Derek Van Mel. Derek is principal of Van Mel Associates, which was founded 25 years ago. They are executive advisors for planning and projects. Their core service is called question-based planning, a plain English streamlined alternative to traditional strategic planning. Derek and his team work both as facilitators with the C-suite and one-on-one advisors to CEOs. Their mission is to help leaders win the fight for focus. They believe clarity and simplicity are the leader's keys to success. Van Mel Associates clients are mostly privately held, established businesses. Derek has a BA in economics, an MBA, and an MA in English. He is the author of 2 books, has been published in dozens of journals, and has spoken in the US, Europe, and Asia. Derek is married to Susan, and they have 2 grown children. Derek's personal interests include travel, hiking, and serving as mentor to new businesses. He is an admirer of Winston Churchill, who insisted that every memo be no longer than 1 page. Derek, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Lori. Great to be here.
I'm excited for our conversation, especially with your bio. It's quite eclectic.
It was a lot of night school.
I bet. All right. So I know we've met previously before this. We had some discussion, and you're not necessarily from Milwaukee. You're expanding your business into the Milwaukee market. How do you go about approaching networking differently in a new market?
Well, you know, I started my practice in Madison. I'm actually a Chicago transplant. But, you know, I grew up a network really informally over all these years. But then about a year and a half ago, I decided I really wanted to expand the business. And you know, that meant coming to Milwaukee. And so I was driving back and forth, getting to know I-94 pretty well and meeting people and realizing it was just not efficient to think that I could grow a general network of people and stay in touch with them and get to know the community and have all that commuting time. So that wasn't going to work. So I needed another solution. And so I remembered advice I got when I started my practice from a fellow named Phil Weiss, who said, you know, Derek, you're going to get 80% of your business from 6 people, but here's the trick, is figuring out who those 6 people are. And so I decided I needed a different approach to come into the Milwaukee market. And so really what I set out to do was to try to find those 6 people who I could really network with very, very closely, really get to know them, that we had a lot of things in common. And build that kind of comfort, trust, rapport, so that we could go out into the marketplace, help promote each other's services, develop synergistic and common contacts, and grow the business that way. That's a little different approach than the general, you know, go to the cocktail party networking that I'm just not naturally good at anyway. So that approach has been working.
And you have a name for this? And I recall?
Well, we call this group the Inner Circle Group. It's not very imaginative. It's not a name that we market. It's just really our own, you know, own tagline for ourselves. But it's been working well enough in Milwaukee that I realized on one of those long drives back to Madison that I should have done it back in my hometown, you know, years ago. So I started up an Inner Circle Group in Madison as well. And it's really made a big difference in how we're coming to market. And the results are great.
Nice. That's really exciting. And it makes sense. 80% of your business comes from, well, the 6 people that you know. Yeah. I've got a follow-up question to that, but not quite yet. Do you think networking is marketing or is it really sales?
Well, you know, it depends how you define those 2 terms. You know, an architect friend of mine, Mark DeWalt, defined marketing as everything you do to get opportunities to sell, which I thought was a brilliant, concise definition. And sales has two steps. Get the meeting, don't screw up the meeting. And so I think with a really well-managed network, particularly if you're more introverted like I am as compared to some more, you know, social sellers, like my wife, for example, if you really can get to know that small number of people and really get to know them well and bring some system to that, then it's as much sales as it is marketing, because you're going immediately to good meetings and you're getting good information so that meeting can be successful and you can move on to the next one and the next one and, you know, build a good relationship and a client base from there.
So networking is kind of a mix of both of them.
Yeah, it is. Now you have different networks too. I mean, these inner circle groups I mentioned are really about going directly to the clientele. But, you know, I have networks like everybody else for professional resources, for information, for other kinds of things. So I like to think I have more than six friends in Milwaukee.
I'm sure. I really liked your definition for marketing and sales. Everything you do to get the opportunity to sell, and then for sales, you have two purposes: to get the meeting and don't screw up.
Yeah, don't screw up. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, my friend used different language, but we'll use that for the radio.
Sure.
Now. Yeah.
All right, now we're going to circle back to your circle, your inner circle, or your circle of six. So how would I go about creating one?
Well, you know, I know you a little bit, Lori, so you're a little more extroverted than I am. But I think for anybody, you can really think of people you already know in a marketplace. And to start with them, we tend to think of networking, or a lot of the advertising and buzz or how-to about networking is about, you know, going to the cocktail party and meeting people you don't know and handing out your card. And that works great for some people. You know, I maybe someone like this, like my wife, Susan, who is a very extroverted, bubbly person, had been in business, now a nurse, but sometimes she would go with me to the, you know, Chamber of Commerce event. And Susan could come into the room with me, not know anybody, walk across the room, get her glass of Chablis, come back and have 12 business cards and know where everybody's kids are going to school. And, you know, we'd have three dinner dates.
Sure.
And just do that naturally. That's, you know, not me. I'm the guy in the corner with the fellow I see, you know, every time and hanging out with him. So, even someone like me, knows a bunch of people. And you start with the people that you know, that you already have good rapport with. And what you might discover is that you can get to know them even better. And if you set some goals to work together as a team, you know, a shared list of targets, a clear understanding of who makes a great client, how to share your elevator pitch, and how to hand that off to other people. I have a colleague in Madison, David Williams, who's run a marketing firm forever, and David calls that the baton. And one of the interesting things that came out of these inner circle groups is we would share those few sentences we would love to have other people say about us so we could, you know, help them get us the meeting. And we would do that, and it was just a disaster because we realized that what we were saying or scripting for other people was wooden, technical, unemotional, dull, forgettable.
Sure.
And so some of my colleagues, particularly Madison, the guys who've known me a long time, were perfectly comfortable to say, Derek, that just is really awful. You can't go out and tell people like that. So one of them said for me, Derek, what I tell people is that you just do a great job of asking questions so people make sure they're on the right page. And without going into a long elaboration about question-based planning and our clientele and so forth. And that was a great help. And we did that for each other,
sure,
too. So that's
so
a technique.
You helped each other kind of craft the elevator pitch for each other, I guess, really,
yeah,
right? Support that other person.
That's right. Now, I guess I would say not elevator pitch is probably the right phrase, but I like David Williams' term, the baton.
The baton,
and that's just one sentence where I would say, and you and I should be able to do this for each other, you've got to meet Lori. You know, she knows how to, right, bring your business to life online or something like that, you'll tell me. But it has to be that short, that enthusiasm, and it really has to begin with, you've just got to meet her. So, or we've just got to meet her. Let's go together. I'm going to set up lunch for the three of us. That's really the best kind of, you know, referral you can get. But that takes work. You know, it's taken about a year to get a group of six people to be able to do that for each other.
Yeah, I believe that. And so what would be the frequency that you guys are meeting?
Well, what we do is, to answer that question, understand my answer, let me back up a bit. So one of the things that we started off with was to say, who do we want to work for? What's our list, our common list? And everybody has their own CRMs and their own long lists. But we said, who would be the ideal clients to have? Who would be the best of the best? So we can make this extra effort, this inner circle of six meeting, really worthwhile. So we spent a lot of time thinking about who would be the great client and that we would all love to work for. And that really, that of course brings energy into it. And that takes time and someone, you know, Derek has to keep track of the Excel spreadsheet and all that jazz. But having that in mind, so what we do is we meet as a group every other month.
Okay.
And talk, go through that list, and we share sales and marketing ideas for each other because we're all, I think, pretty experienced people, but we all can get better. So that's what we do every other month. But in alternate months, then I meet one-on-one with each person so that they can talk about some things that are particularly confidential or sensitive, or maybe they've got a lead or prospect that they've got that isn't from the list, or there's someone they really want to get to meet and they want my help to see if I can make that meeting happen. So it took a while to work out our rhythm, but in fact, it's really very simple. You know, with Outlook and regular meeting dates,
sure.
You know, it's not a problem.
That's really, this is so intriguing. Only because most of the networking discussions I have are around, you know, go to the chamber event mm-hmm. and get on a committee and, you know, put in the time and really just connect with as many people as possible.
Right.
And you're doing the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You're really going deep into supporting a very small group of people. But in reality, that six has huge reach.
Right.
And it's probably really well connected.
Right. And again, they know what to say when they hear in their conversation some cue that might apply for, you know, my strategic planning or project management work.
Yeah.
Now, I do go to events
sure.
generally, but only if I'm really interested in the topic. And one of the great things about Milwaukee is that there are so many great events. MMAC just does a fantastic job in bringing in CEOs mm-hmm. and their roundtables and you know, experts. So I try to go every month to one event. But of course, that's really different than other networking people
sure.
who say you should go to, you know, two or three events every week.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
No,
that makes sense. Well, there's a balance.
Yeah.
You know, you got to invest your time in the places where it's going to be most beneficial, you know, maximizing the outcome.
Well, that's right. Well, and actually, it was one of those general events I went to in Madison where I met Liz Sparks, who I think you know pretty well.
I sure do.
She introduced me to you. So it's good to get out of that circle of six from time to time and meet some new folks.
Yep. Our past guest talked about your network in the sense of it being a garden that you have to, well, pull out the weeds,
mm-hmm.
but also you have to plant new seeds.
That's right.
So it's a constant, you know, nurturing. Speaking of networking, let's move into some of my questions.
Sure.
Can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story or experience that you've had?
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Well, one of the most interesting ones recently was watching the dynamics of these groups come together. So we have these groups of six. Now, it's not just the groups exist not just for me. They exist for everybody else too.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's been fascinating is that in the group in Madison, there's a fellow, Kevin, who is a business development for a large contractor. And so over this year, I've done work for his firm. I've referred him to clients. I know that I've connected him with other members, or other members in the inner circle group have connected to help them, both of them together, pay a call. They've also, you know, we've developed some joint marketing programs as well. So what I find is so interesting about this is that you better get a bunch of creative people together and you really forge a team and team spirit and identity. Going after the best of the best clients. And then some new ideas and other kinds of connections come out of that. So it's not just, well, you referred me once to client X, so I owe you a referral to client Y, and you know, we're going to keep count. And that's just not how it how that's evolved.
Yeah.
So it's really making the networking group in really a sales management activity. And then the, all the ideas about new product development come out of that. One breakthrough for me from this group was has been that they were giving me very friendly criticism about I was over explaining my services.
Sure.
And so not just to, not only did they help me with the baton, but then they also said, well, Derek, you've got to get your ideas on a page. You have to be able to really summarize so you can, when you do get that opportunity to get the meeting, which is step one of sales, that you can really provide the client insights and value instantly. And they show me a way to do that. So that was a new product development idea that came out of this, not again, not just trading referrals. So that was really, it's really fantastic. It was really a breakthrough for us.
Wow, that sounds really exciting. That, and you probably, well, you had no idea that that was going to happen, obviously.
No.
Just the evolution of putting a bunch of, you know, really powerful minds together.
Yeah. And get them comfortable enough to say, you know, Derek, you idiot, you got to change how you're doing it. And enough of that, and you're going to learn something.
Have other people in your circle of six experienced similar little epiphanies or product evolution or development?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what's, you know, it's so interesting to see this group come together. And another thing that we're doing as a group, now in Madison, I've been running CEO roundtables twice a year. And now some of those folks are helping me as co-sponsors, and we're doing the same in Milwaukee. And so that's a way to not only help us all get to a the mailing list, a common list, but you know, it takes a lot of trust then to share your other lists as well. But that's emerged. And so that's led to all kinds of conversations. So it's a thrill for me when I go to one of those bi-monthly meetings where we're all together to hear that, oh, yeah, you know, Ed and Bill have already been working together on some other thing and I didn't even know about it. So that's terrific. That kind of has a life, you know, outside of just the group.
Yeah, that's exciting. And to think that you're the one that started all of it.
Yeah, I wish I could patent it.
Oh, I'm sure there's something you can do along those lines. All right, so large or small, it's definitely important to continue to stay in front of and best nurture your network. What are the things that you're doing to stay in front of and nurture your network?
Well, these meetings are really helpful, of course, and by having the regular schedule. And I think a lot of people assume, and I used to be this way, and it was a big mistake, that I would meet somebody in February and we'd have a good meeting, and then I wouldn't really need to be in touch with them again until sometime a year later, or which is just, of course, ridiculous, particularly as fast-paced and distractible as we are now. So having that regular monthly contact is just essential. And again, it's a trade-off between being able to do that with a few people and see them often, and or seeing, you know, many people just a few times. So we naturally stay in touch. And of course, as we've developed business together, then we're in touch through the business, through the, you know, the assignments that we have.
Yep.
But I also do, outside of the networking group, I write posts for LinkedIn.
Okay.
I love to write. And the invitations to these roundtables is a powerful way to cross-refer. So, for example, this upcoming session in Madison, I was able to go to the group, and through knowing them and LinkedIn, I could see that they knew some of the people I wanted to bring into our roundtable. So I was able to use their name and say, you know, so-and-so said that you'd be interested in this roundtable. And of course, that makes just a world of difference.
Sure.
You know, when we go to make the phone call and see if they'll, you know, join up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet. Well, and LinkedIn posts are really powerful.
They are.
I really find that it's, and LinkedIn does a really good job of letting your network know that you've published some content. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to just stay in front of those people as long as you're adding value and you're not taking it from a sales perspective.
Right. And that's actually another use. It's a great question. It makes me think of this. Another use of this group, because they know you so well and they're, because they're not part of your company, they're a great sort of research panel. So I'll draft an article. I'm working on one. And what is culture really? And I'll share that with these folks. And again, they'll say, oh, this is really great. This is not really great. This is this is going to get the CEO's attention. This is not. So that's also just a way that the group reinforces itself.
And, yeah.
I think too that, you know, I work, you know, really as a soloist, but many of the other Inner Circle members, both in Milwaukee, Madison, you know, are business development people for big companies.
Sure.
And so they have lots of internal issues that they've got to deal with, of course. But I think one thing they value of having this external group is then it's, you know, they don't have to say just all the right things. They can say what they think is on their mind and get some real objective feedback.
Yeah, I bet. Well, because you've built that relationship of trust within each other.
Right.
That it's okay to be candid, you know, and just not hold back, no reservations on things that need to be said.
Right.
All right. So what advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Well, I think that that they should consider, you know, deeply, you know, whether they're more introverted or extroverted. And there's been a lot of press about this recently. And my wife actually got a book, Susan Cain's book, if you know it, called Quiet. Mm-hmm. Susan Cain, C-A-I-N. She'd done a wonderful TED Talk, I think, called The Power of Introverts.
Okay.
And Susan and I have been married 28 years, and we learned a lot about each other reading this book. So I think that's just, I'll just repeat what a lot of other people are saying, is that you really need to know yourself and not force yourself to, you know, do something that's uncomfortable. It just is not going to work. You know, if you're an introvert and you go to some general unstructured event, you know, you're just, it's just not going to work for you.
Uh-huh.
Again, unless the topic really interests you or you go with a wingman. So I think that people need to, first they need to see where they are in that spectrum. I have a friend, Ed Purcell, who's just a wonderful business development professional. And Ed is much more social than me. He's been, you know, Commodore of the Yacht Club, and he's, you know, active in a lot of activities. And is just great at getting out and meeting lots of people. And very comfortable doing that. It's a lot of fun and energizing for him. And so he's going to network in a different way than I am. But having said all that, I think that even the most extroverted person should really consider who that inner circle is and really think about how well do they really know me? Will they, if they're in a meeting with a client who might need what I have to sell, would they be able to hear the cues in that conversation to say, you know, maybe this would be interested in something that I have to offer. And here's that, you know, great baton sentence that I'm going to lay on them to see if I can, you know, get the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it doesn't mean you can't have both kinds of networks.
Yeah.
Even if you're, you know, the most extroverted person in the world. So I would give it a try.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love this concept of the circle of six. It's really quite fascinating. And I know that you initiated it because you're an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
However, as an extrovert, I could see it being just as beneficial, because the extroverts tend to, they want to meet as many people as possible.
Sure.
You know, and may not be doing as good of a job as nurturing, you know, that really core people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that having that circle of six for both, you know, regardless if you're an introvert or an extrovert, will definitely be beneficial.
Well, it seems to be paying off for at least 12 people. Anyway. Yeah, you know, I think about one of my colleagues in Madison, Steve Johansson, who'd been a CEO of a large engineering firm and now runs some EA groups and is on several boards. And, you know, so Steve is the kind of guy, said, here's a room of 100 people. Great. I'm going to get more energy. I'm feeling a little low. So I'm going to go to some gathering where there's all these people. And that, you know, that pumps him up.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, Steve is that way. And but he still obviously seems to value having the smaller group, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Okay. So digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
Well, that's a loaded question coming from you. But, you know, I'm of the school, and so don't shoot me, but that a lot of social digital networking is what I call human avoidance software. And there's absolutely a place for it. I'm active in LinkedIn. But I think that people need to, you know, meet face-to-face. And that doesn't mean that those experiences can't be enhanced or reinforced with digital media. Absolutely, they should be. But, you know, we live in the age of distraction. Guy named Dave Florin, who is the one of the principals at the Hebing Group, marketing expert, told me recently that on average, people check their smartphones 240 times a day.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It is. And so human contact is lost, and we need it. We're human beings. I have two millennials as children, two smarter people you couldn't get. But I know that in their lives, as they're finding their way in life, you know, the need to meet people face to face, whether they're social networks or business networks or career development networks, I mean, is just really, really important.
Uh-huh. I agree, though. Face to face is important. And it's funny that you call it the human avoidance software, because that is very true. It's so much easier to just, you know, send someone a quick chat or comment on their Facebook post, or you just send them a quick email, but that you're removing all of that human emotion and connectivity, then that's really what the relationship was built on.
Yeah. And it's the joy of life, right? It's the fun that we get, a lot of the fun that we get out of doing what we do, whatever it is, whether it's work or not.
Yeah. But there's obviously a lot of pros associated with digital still. And
there
of course,
are.
I've got to say that out there.
Yeah.
And I've covered that too in a lot of spots, as far as like building your own personal brand is extremely important nowadays. Mm-hmm. And digital is a great tool to continue to build your brand,
right,
such as you continuing to post valuable information on LinkedIn. It's supporting your brand and your name.
Yeah. Well, and I frankly need to do a better job. I'm not just saying that to make you feel good.
Well, as you're trying to expand your network in the Milwaukee market, I would imagine one of the first things you do once you do meet someone in person is reach out to connect with them on LinkedIn.
Sure.
So they're going to look at your profile now that LinkedIn's profile has changed again. They are highlighting your recent activity, which mm-hmm. would include the posts that you have.
Right.
And that's one of the first things that they're going to see.
Well, and because of you, I met a fellow this morning and we connected by LinkedIn after the meeting, and
yep,
there you go.
Exactly. Well, that's just the normal kind of trend as far as or that path. You meet someone and you connect on LinkedIn, you know, so your LinkedIn profile really needs to be polished.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I try to do, I think I'm a little overdue for this, is, and I'm sure you give this advice too, is you have to I don't know what the polite word is, but, you know, clean the attic of your LinkedIn contacts as well. And if you want to be a valuable resource to your inner circle or whatever circle you have, if you know, somebody sees that you're linked into so-and-so and then asks you for an introduction, but you don't really know them well,
uh-huh,
or you don't really not that enthusiastic about the person you do have a LinkedIn connection with, that's awkward and to be avoided. So, you know, I think you have to give a lot of thought to that. So I know other people have different philosophies.
Yep.
But, you know, that would be mine.
Yeah. No, I agree. I initially, when I had LinkedIn, was just connecting with anyone because, you know, I want to have so many contacts.
Sure.
But I stopped that practice a long time ago because I really, when that specific scenario came up, can you connect me to this person or do you recommend this person? And I had to, you know, stop the brakes because I really don't know this person.
Yeah.
So I really take pride in making sure that my LinkedIn is people I have a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone does reach out to connect with me blindly,
uh-huh,
I'll look to see if there are mutual connections, or I'll say, hey, you know, we haven't connected, but I'd love the opportunity to get to know you further before I officially add you to my network.
Yeah, I think it's good to have that sort of ask permission, unless it's obvious. You know, a standard I hope I live up to, I don't always do it, is to, before connecting, I ask myself, you know, can I help this person?
Uh-huh.
Because if I can't help them, well then, right, it's just not going to work.
Sure.
But another benefit of LinkedIn, so bring that back to the inner circle idea, is, again, having a shared list, basically, effectively a CRM, if you will,
then that's
one application anyway. LinkedIn can really work because
you've
got a group of people and you really, really want to get some kind of introduction to, you know, CEO X. And so everybody can, you know, trust each other enough to go to their own LinkedIn connections and see, maybe if not a first connection or a second connection that will get you there.
Uh-huh.
So that's having that shared list. Of course, it's true in any sales organization, but in the context of networking, if you share your list of targets, then people can use LinkedIn and other social media to really help you get there.
Oh, yeah.
But I shouldn't tell you this, but you know, my wife is the Facebook person in our family. And I don't do it, so I fully expect to get a lecture from you later.
Pros and cons. There's pros and cons to everything.
Okay.
Okay. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm sorry to say that. That would be traveling back in time quite a bit. what I would do is I would do what I tell my children to do who are 25 and 27, and that is to think of life today or life in your 20s as adventure travel rather than a career choice. So meet more people, purposely seek out people in very different fields from the ones you think you're interested in. When I was a little boy, I think a middle schooler or something, we had a class assignment, you know, to go talk to people about their jobs. Mm-hmm. And my mother, God bless her, had this idea that, well, she picked that idea up. She thought it was great. So she arranged for me to not just meet one person, but four or five.
Oh, wow.
In their offices, you know, my father's boss, for example, and an artist that she knew. And I think I was 8 or 10 years old, maybe 12, I don't know. But I still remember each of those meetings, and that was really powerful. And when my kids were in their early teens, I took them to two friends of mine had very different businesses. One was an architect and another manufacturer. And they loved taking these 10 and 12-year-olds through their shop, mm-hmm. and those ideas stuck with them. And there's a story here I just love to tell about this. So you asked me for stories. So one of my friends, the architect friend in Madison at Linville, had at the time about a 4 or 5-person architectural shop, and had designed hundreds and hundreds of buildings in Madison. And my children were, I think, 10 and 12. My son, Clay, loved drawings, naturally was interested in it, and loved the tour. And so Ed, who was kind of old school then, this is some 15 years ago, didn't have any electronics. He had this old paper card Rolodex, if you can picture that.
Yep.
and he was showing the kids how, you know, they wrote down names, and they showed, you know, he showed them where you know, Derek Van Mail's name was and so forth. So we do that, and then we're out looking at the drawings or something, and my son asks if he can go off for a while. We assume he's going to the bathroom. That's not what happened. Because a day later, I get a call from Ed, or a couple days later, I get a call from my architect friend. It said, Derek, this is just great. I had to call you, so I'm going through my Rolodex, and there in the Rolodex, in 10-year-old pencil writing, was Clayton Van Mel with his phone number. And I just bumped into Ed again just a couple days ago, and he says he's kept that because he just loves to see my son's handwriting.
That's wonderful.
You know, my daughter Trina wasn't quite so interested at that time, but she still remembers, you know, going to the office. So that's something I would do at 20. That's something I would do at 30 and 40 and 50 as well. Just meet people who do stuff very different from what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, you learn more.
You
know, I mean, there's so many assumptions that you make about industries and how things work and how people function. And the more experiences that you have and the more diverse they are, the more knowledge you have.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I love about my work, because I work with manufacturers, I work with service firms, hospitals, and people are so different. That's fascinating. So, you know, that conversation, of course, seems to be, you know, antithetical to having a tight circle of six. So you need to have both, too.
Yep.
You need to have your own adventure travel in your networking and have a lot of fun at it.
Nice. I really like that answer. Meet more people.
Meet more people. Different people.
Different people.
Yeah.
We've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
No. Oh, man. Some of the people I like to meet are not alive. So, like Winston Churchill. So, I don't think I'm going to get there, at least not in this life. Not a name comes to mind. But I know this is not a show about politics, and I won't go into politics. But what I know that what we hear about what goes on, you know, in summit meetings between heads of state, I just simply can't imagine it. So one of the things I would love to be able to do is just be a fly on the wall for some meeting between, a president of this country and president of another country. Again, I won't name any names right now, but I would just love to understand what really happens in the White House, and not particularly this White House, or I'm not sure. making political
sure.
comment.
Yep, yep.
But I really love to know how those conversations go and to meet people who could get there. And I think, of course, I'm 57, not 27, so I know a lot more people, maybe, and some people with some more years of experience. So could I get into the White House to eavesdrop on a meeting with my six degrees of separation? Let's say yes.
Sure.
Not knowing if it's true or not, but let's say yes.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know about the eavesdropping part, but
right.
But I'm sure there's a way to get in there.
Yeah.
All right. So we all love to learn, I would imagine, as someone who's advising business professionals, you're constantly learning and reading new books. What book are you reading right now?
Well, a book I just finished, which really made a profound effect on me, is a book written by David McCullough called The Path Between the Seas. And this was written in 1977. And it's the story of the Panama Canal, which the French started in 1860s and failed at, and then the Americans took over, with Teddy Roosevelt, then completed it. And it's just an amazing story about medicine, about engineering, about politics, about money, but about management. It's an unbelievably powerful story about how under Roosevelt there were two senior engineers, project managers, if you will, mm-hmm. for the Panama Canal. Over the course of a dozen years, and very different guys, but they were all had both of them had really behaved in some ways as managers and leaders in a very similar way, even though their styles were very different. One guy was very flamboyant, the other guy absolutely not. But they all made the point of be clear that everybody knows the importance of what you're doing, share the information about what's going on without judgment, listen to everybody, be present. And don't discriminate against, people, whether their titles are or salaries or position. And so, in fact, the way they managed was so similar, which was amazing, just amazing, given the incredible complexity and difficulty of the project. So that's part of the story, management story, that I found interesting. But also it's interesting as a governance story, how Teddy Roosevelt realized that the project manager needed to be able to get decisions quickly and from the president. And so Roosevelt made some mistakes early on, restructured and simplified sort of the governing body for the whole Panama Canal project. And in the end, it was very, very simple. So the project manager could report to the Secretary of the Army, which had the Army Corps of Engineers, and then write to Roosevelt. And of course, Roosevelt wasn't shy about ignoring what some of the formal rules were, but he knew that how decision-making was governed and the system for that was essential, and that his role was to pick the right person for the job, and how he learned from the mistakes that the French made and who they selected to both run and finance the project. So talk about management on this enormous, enormous scale. So it's an amazing book. But the lessons for what is a manager, what is a leader, how those things are different, how they overlap, was just, to me, just fascinating.
And they're all still true today.
All still true today, right.
Learn from history, right?
That's right, recent and distant.
Yes, absolutely. I'll have to make a note of that one.
We'll have some time on your hands because it's about 700 pages.
That one will probably be on the back burner for a little while then. Unless if I can find it in an audiobook version, I might just...
Well, you probably can.
Stick to that one for my next really long road trip.
Okay.
Any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Well, I think that the central idea for me... And I really need to continue to think about what this means for how I work and how I find work is fundamentally, I don't know if you call it the spiritual or the ethical question, but it's back to that point, how can you be helpful? And if you keep that question in mind, and I'm not claiming to be perfect, not by any stretch, but if you keep that question in mind with the people that you meet, what you ask them to do, that I think is going to give you a lasting benefit. But at the same time, too, one of the things that I've had to be disciplined about is, as I build this network, is also to see if other people are generous, at least as generous as you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made some mistakes, and people have come and gone from a group because they don't necessarily know when to say no. They don't always do what they say they're going to do. It's important that people will do that, that they can be articulate about, you know, why they're maybe uncomfortable with something that you've asked them to do. I'm not ready to do that. I don't know that person. I really need to know you better, Derek, those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
So you also need to have some discipline about not only for yourself and what your generosity of spirit is, but you also have to have some standards for how other people are going to behave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you need to be diplomatic and tactful about that, of course. But I think a lot of people make a mistake of networking with people without really being sure that both sides are going to really keep the promises that they make as you develop a relationship.
That's really important.
It is, yeah.
Do what you say you're going to do.
Do what you say you're going to do.
It's so simple, yet often easily messed up.
I think my next LinkedIn post is going to be, please say no. And teach people how to say no or not yet or... not just nod their head in agreement when they don't mean it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So, Derek, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
Well, I'd love it if they just give me a phone call.
Okay.
And my phone number is area code 608-260-9300. But you can find Derek Van Mel or vanmel.com online or LinkedIn really pretty easily. But call me.
All right. We'll include that information in the show notes. Thanks so much for being on the show, Derek.
Thank you. It's been a thrill.
It has been. Great conversation. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Derek Van Mel for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to laurie@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.